Meeting to order. Good morning, everyone. This is a Sussex County Comprehensive Planning and Planning and Zoning Workshop. The agenda was published on April 3rd, and today we're going to start with public comment, and we have one of our state representatives with us today, Mr. Rich Collins, and we're going to ask him to go first. And it's your time, and then after you, Mr. Kramer.
Thanks so much, appreciate it. I was actually invited here by one of your members. I'm not going to say which one. It'll be up to him or her to reveal that if they would like to.
But who could it be?
The reason I wanted to come in, I wanted to talk most.
Then I found out afterwards that we're not supposed to be doing that because you know we want the House and Senate guys to stay up there. But in your case, that's different. We want you down here.
Well, I hope that's true. Well, look, I haven't felt like it's my business really to intrude in your affairs. Since I got elected, I don't think I've commented on anything. But I do want to talk about the process of the land use plan, because I was intimately involved with that for many years. I was actually there in Dover when some of the legislation was written, including the law that you're working on under right now to create a plan. And there's an awful lot of people that do not understand that process. The fundamental thing is this. If you had two tanks of water equal size, and you had one of them had a 1-inch drain hose and the other one had, say, a 4-inch drain hose, you would know that 100% of the time that one tank would drain before the other. Well, politically, this process is going to work exactly the same way for you. Your water tank, your political tank, has a 1-inch drain hose. The folks in the federal government, the state government, even the folks that you hire, their tank has a 4-inch hose. Why? Because they are allowed by law to work on this plan anywhere they want, anytime they want, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. They can call together any group of people they want, any researchers they want. You and the five county councilmen that are elected who appointed you are limited to public meetings, pre-published agenda, and you do all your discussion in public. It's very, very limiting. And the result of this has been, over the last 20 to 30 years in the country, this is not just you now, understand, this is really a national thing. The result has been a tremendous diversion of power from elected officials to appointed folks. It's not anything about the people involved, it's the process. And so I just want you to be aware of that. To me, that is the single most important thing about this process that no one talks about, how difficult it will be for you and the county council to protect the rights of the people, given that the way these decks are stacked. Another point I want to make that seems to be some point of confusion. DLDOT cannot tell you anything about how to do your plan, nor can the state planning office. I was there when the law was written that established the whole planning process. It says very, very clearly, yes, they want you to follow all these steps, but in the end, the final decision is that of the county or the municipality. So I just want to make sure that is very clear. Now, those things are just about the process. I have worked on this for so many years. I've been preaching this till I'm blue in the face, but please take that to heart. Now, I want to share something I found last night from the Sussex Population Consortium, State Planning Office. Have you all looked at these numbers? Because if you haven't, I would beg you to do so. Our problem is not growth. In the year from 2025 to 2030, we're only going to add 5,721 people, or 2,361 households. But it goes down catastrophically from that point. In 35, only 4,200 new residents, then 2,300. And literally, from 2035 to 40, we only add 428 households in Sussex County. that our problem is not too much growth at this point. This the gale, and it's not just Sussex, it's the whole state. And I didn't look past that, probably nationally, because of the death rate. We are an aging population. So really, I don't have a whole lot more to say than that, other than Sussex has a tremendous tradition of freedom, led to a lot of prosperity for the government down here. We've brought in a lot of folks that have brought a lot of prosperity with them, and if we don't continue to do that, I don't quite know where it's going to come from. Okay, that's all I have to say.
Mr. Collins, can I ask one question?
Because yes, you
may be able to help us out on just with all your connections and things and access to information, because with the population numbers that you said, for example, Mr. Ross pointed out that one of the problems with population is it's not an active and an accurate reflection of households in Sussex County because we have so many second homes. If you have any data that would show that in addition to the population information that you provided, there's also a number on top of that of second home, not residents in Sussex County, that would be really helpful because that's a number that we're also struggling to get our hands on. So it really shows, you know, people, not just residents.
Well, I tell you what, I'll have our researchers up at the hall work on that
okay.
for you.
Thanks.
I will say that one thing I forgot to mention is the other huge issue that I see is deteriorating housing. You know, we developed a situation now where we have the beautiful housing for retirees moving here, and we have untold numbers of houses that are literally well past the date they should have been taken away and are going to go away on their own at some point. I don't see any economic power that would replace those homes. It is so expensive to build housing today, a little bit because of the county, because of all the other regulations. No builder can afford to go in and build this low-income housing anymore, especially not the ones that are scattered around and aren't all clustered together real close. And that's an issue that I think deserves some serious consideration. But let's face it, who are the folks that live in those homes? Most likely people that have lived in Sussex County all their lives. I talked to one of my constituents the other day. Her total income, $1,200 a month. I've talked to any number of people in that situation. Okay, thank you all. I got
Rich. We need to reconcile these population numbers because they're critical to our future land use element as we plan 10, 20, 30 years down the road. And now we're issuing around 2,200 residential building permits annually. Now, either those houses are going empty or the population numbers are terribly wrong.
Well, no. What it is right now, from 2010 to 2015, we were expected to have 13,857 new residents, and that was 7,223 households.
We've issued like three or four times that number in building permits.
Well, no, you've issued more, but I don't think it's that much more. But at the point, that's exactly the point, though, is that you're talking about 7,000 households over a five-year period. Well, we're issuing in that same period 11,000 permits.
More
than
that. Yeah.
So you've got this disparity where there's 4,000 or 5,000. Permits issues, homes built that aren't in these population numbers.
Well, no doubt
that's what we're trying. Oh yeah, well we know. We're virtually certain what it is, but we would like to have something other than our dead reckoning, you know, to support that.
I'll do what I can to find some information out for you.
Well, let's see. Okay, thank you.
All right,
thank you.
I've done some work on that we can talk about today.
Okay, great, good.
Yeah, and
good.
I want to get your feedback on my methodology for tackling it.
Okay.
Are you heading out?
Okay. I've got to go.
Okay, I'll get their feedback and someone will reach out to you.
Email if you got
sure.
It. All right, folks. It's r.collins because there are other Richard Collins. The state police get a lot of more things.
Trust me, I think they can find you. Okay, Mr. Kramer.
My name is Dan Kramer. Now the first thing, I'm going to get on your cases. Number one, speak into your mics. Why? Sitting back there, I can't even hear you, or barely. Why? Because we got, don't get me started. You know, we got really good help here in Sussex County, but they sure don't know how to fix a piece of crap here that doesn't work, because the minute you sit back like that and you speak, nobody's going to hear you. And sometimes even when you put your there. Now, I don't need to do that, because I don't need a goddamn microphone, because I can stand back here and you can hear me all over the place.
Mr. Kramer, we got it. Message received.
I don't care. Don't get on my case. Because the man upstairs there, sitting up there, is making somewhere close to between $70,000 and $80,000 for what? When this thing could be fixed, and by the way, when I'm home on the computer and you guys sit back, you got the same problem. Okay. Occasionally, he's the best of all. Because generally he sits up and speaks. But every once in a while he leaves him back up. When he does, you can't hear him. That's the big one of the biggest problems we have. Hey, this problem can be fixed. I've been around microphones for a lot of years. I'm here to tell you. Oh, well, it will echo. There's a way to fix it. Now, what I really came down here, really was not planning on speaking about this, but the more I hear about it, the aggravator I get. Chicken farms. You had somebody come in and raise and hold a cane because, oh, there's going to be chickens across the road, and it might affect the business. Yeah, give me a break. If that's the case, then how come out here there's three places that sell ice creams on dairy farms? And how much more stinking can a place be than a dairy farm when you go there and you sit outside in the summertime? Flies all over the place, cow manure all over the place, and the stink all over the place, but yet the people are piling in there. So you're going to tell me this chicken barbecue is going to be a problem? And if you want to kill the golden goose, start saying, well, we've got to have these chicken farms out here, we can't have. The question I have, let's look at who owns the properties and who's putting them up. Is that the reason they got the wrong name, wrong ethnicity, and all that? That they're opposed, if their name was Wheatley, Hudson, or Ross, they'd say, oh, come on, we'll just let you all have it. But being it's the wrong name, they want to raise Holy Cane. And you can take that any way to the bank you want to. Thank you.
Okay, then. You know, Mr. Robertson, maybe we need to start reading our preamble before these meetings, because much of what was just said, we really can't take under consideration the last several sentences.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So maybe in the future we'll need to advise the public.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I agree.
All right, yes, ma'am. Come on up. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Morning. Should it be lower?
And you definitely should lean into that microphone.
Please.
Okay. All right. Can you hear me now? Okay. I'm signing my name. Okay. So I'm a Sussex County resident and have been.
And your name is?
My name is Nan Zamorski.
Of course, I knew that,
yes.
But we needed you to say that for the microphone,
I know you did.
For the tape. Okay.
Yes. So I'm very interested in the planning and zoning in Sussex County and the state of Delaware. And I've read through your mission, and I like your mission, for county and zoning. And so in looking at the Delaware strategies that you have in your 2008 comprehensive plan. My comments are really with the investment level one, where you've stated to maintain and enhance the community character, and well-designed, efficient new growth and development. That's the first comment. And then the second comment is about the investment level 3. This is like under your land use for environmentally sensitive areas where, and in your own words, you said, well, more scrutiny is required. Special scrutiny should be in these environmentally sensitive areas. Okay. So the reason people come to Delaware or come back to Delaware, that's what I did. I grew up here and then went to the University of Delaware and then followed job opportunities. So my husband and I and family have lived in Pennsylvania, Virginia, and North Carolina. And the reason people come here is because of our charm and our character. And that's why they come as tourists. Tourism and ecotourism and fishing and recreation. And I am concerned that we're losing that. I do live in Seaford. The issues that I'm seeing across, especially across Sussex County, is it looks like uncontrolled growth, and where a lot of farms and forests are being lost, and they're lost forever. And as a taxpayer, I feel that a lot of these infrastructure improvements that come with much of this development have to fall on our shoulders, or like look at our budget shortfall. I know it's not just infrastructure, it's really education, Medicaid, there's a lot of other issues because I've been following that also. But I am concerned about the sprawl. And in the areas that I've lived in, most of the areas outside of the state of Delaware, we've lived in rural areas, and we've seen this. Just myself, I feel I'm old, but in my short time period, I've seen huge changes in each town that we've lived in out of state, and I'm seeing it happen here. So time after time, what's happened is in state, maybe developers or I don't know, I really don't know who they are, but people from out of state and in state I feel that they take advantage of the rural areas because the rural areas do not have a lot of the laws required to have controlled growth, just like what our mission for Sussex County says, that we do want to have, we want to enhance and maintain our character, and I feel that a lot of this new growth does not do that. I do feel that the what happens is that, you know, once this changes or the farms are cleared and just so many cookie cutter developments are being dropped down in Sussex County that, you know, we'll never have that same character that we had initially. And what brings tourism, besides farming, tourism is a big industry in Sussex County, and we're losing what is drawing people to come here and then go home. So the second concern is about the regulations and recommendations for our environmentally sensitive areas, including our marshes and wetlands and rivers. I do a lot of volunteer work, including being a creek watcher for the Nanticoke Watershed Alliance, and I've been doing that for 6 years. And I grew up on the river. I'm living in the same house I grew up in. And so I've seen I see what's happening because I've always been out and in the river. And I see development right on the river's edge or the water's edge, stream edge, pond edge. And what's happening is, you know, all the towns, I go to the town meetings, town commissioners, and cities complain about the cost of stormwater runoff, but we're not doing anything to reduce it. So if we just had simple things like setbacks, and this has been established in many other areas around the country. I don't know all the rules and regulations, but I know it's feasible. Maryland's done some things, I know, and South Carolina has some good setbacks. But if we just, instead of allowing building to occur right on the river's edge where when it rains, the runoff, like in Seaford, the luxury apartments in Seaford, all the water from the roof during a heavy rainfall is going to fall right into the river. And also the banks, We need buffer zones along the banks of our waters to maintain the healthy waters that we have, or the ones that aren't healthy, to bring them back. We can bring them back, but right now there's no vegetation. So I live on the headwaters of the Nanticoke. New housing, besides the riverfront apartments in Seaford, new housing is being put right on the river. They're wiping out all vegetation on the banks because we don't have any, at least recommendations about keeping vegetation, because that filters it and it reduces the sediment that runs into the river. All the water, all the grass, the long eel grass that used to be so prevalent when I was swimming and as a kid in the river is gone. And I've gone to all these different meetings and conferences to find out, and I ask everybody from the state of Delaware, why, what's happened? And I ask the fishermen that are always right out in front of our house, where did the grass go? And everyone, without an exception, says it's sediment. And calm rivers that usually have a surface like this are now very high energy with high waves from wakes. So I don't mean to get off on that, but what's happened is, so we have to protect these areas because the grass, for instance, that's why people come to fish. That's why the Nanticoke River is still the most pristine river going into the Chesapeake Bay. Fishermen, we can't keep the fish now during certain spawning periods, but the fishermen have even said that they noticed the grass has disappeared, and they would gladly help volunteers replant the grass, but we have to stop the destruction. So basically, if we had setbacks and buffer zones and the narrow headwaters of our freshwater streams, and I'm sure over in the Center for Inland Bays, the same thing, if we had no wake zones, that would do a lot to protect these very sensitive areas. And I do have pictures just showing several feet of soil just in front of my house. My printer ran out of ink, but I could show you. The trees are just falling into the water because they're not being protected. And the other thing is with building, there's a lot of mitigation going on in the state of Delaware. And I've spoken to numerous contractors because I just pull up to their job site. And they think I'm an official, but I'm not. But what they share with me, a lot of the new developments in Bethany and Lewis, they're sinking. And they keep trucking in truckload after truckload of dirt. And the houses are sinking, the walls are cracking because development has been allowed in these very sensitive areas. And we need to protect our marshes and wetlands because they act like a huge sponge for stormwater runoff, storm events, rain events, and high tides. And so if we lose that ability, we're going to have more problems. So basically, my recommendations, I don't think it would cost the state of Delaware anything. It's just common sense approach to maintain our character and our charm of why we all love Sussex County. Thank you. Okay. Do you have any questions?
I don't think so. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Good morning. I'm Rich Barrasso with the Sussex Alliance for Responsible Growth. I have a copy, Janelle, that I can give to you as well. I have just three brief areas of comment, if I can have the area. Three brief areas. The first is, this is the plan timeline that's currently on the website. And although there are no specific dates between the spring of 2016 and the summer of 2018, can you give us an idea in terms of where we are in this process? Are we on pace?
Pass
that. Oh, sorry. Right. So we revised this one. There was a motion that was made at the commission maybe 2 months ago or so, and I think it still sort of falls within the general thought of that, but to start looking at the elements more quickly in the process than this one outlined. And We just haven't had a chance to update that. And as you know from being here, what we've started to do is really get into the meat of some of these elements.
Absolutely.
I'm familiar with a different version of the same information. So.
And again, it's not critical that we understand it today, but if a revised copy is available, that would be helpful.
Okay.
We're past that, Mr. Barrasso. We're one step beyond your last mark. We did that the last meeting in March. We did the just the initial discussion of the future land use plan. So we're into the element design and writing at the moment, draft.
Okay. We're pretty close. If you look at the spreadsheet that we've had, which, like I said, is a different format of that, we're pretty close to where we were supposed to be when it was going to go out to the five public meetings. And, you know, if you look at that, we're a little bit ahead in some respects because we started working on some elements, you know.
And some things run concurrently. So the workshops overlap our writing of the element design.
Yep.
But we're in the next line over from that.
Okay. Again, there are a lot of the public, many are minimally involved in it. Some are very actively involved, and I think the schematic like this is helpful so people can ground in terms of how the process is moving along. You mentioned the elements, Mr. Robertson. It would be helpful to understand how the elements are being prioritized for workshop scheduling. We spoke to a group down in South Bethany last week. It's a conservation group. They asked when conservation would be on the agenda. Many of these groups would like to plan to attend and get a little better turnout, at least in person. So if there's any way that we can have a forecast, a schedule in terms of what element's going to be discussed, it would benefit those folks that want to plan accordingly.
And there is sort of what we went through was a tentative list of the order of the elements. And as Mr. Ross pointed out, it's not totally inflexible, and some of them in that order, like I think mobility and certainly future land use, come back around a couple times, and certainly they're sort of underlying the whole thing the whole way through. What I think we've also run into is it's we can't plot out, I mean, we could try, but I don't know how useful it would be. You can't allocate, and we found, an hour to each element because some are easier than others. Some take on a life of their own, and you need more time. So we have a tentative order, but I would hesitate to say that, you know, on May 21st, we're going to be dealing with such and such an element because, you know, it's just going to depend on sort of where we are at that point.
Yeah, the county does a good job, and I'm sure that Janelle should get the credit for that in terms of letting folks know on the website. But because of the rules in terms of agendas, how close to the meeting they can be communicated, sometimes that's enough time for folks to plan accordingly. So, but that would be helpful. We tell people to go to the website to understand what's going to take place.
We could probably put that list up with the disclaimer that it's, you know.
Yeah, the problem you run into is sometimes we don't finish our work. Yeah. I mean, it gets carried over. Public comment carries beyond what our plan schedules are. Input carries. We might need additional input. The way the consultant has decided to help us is to go through the opportunities and strategies and all that first, and then to try to draft language in an element. So that becomes a multiple step process. So what happens is we visit an element, then we move on to another element, we come back, revisit an element, and this is going to go back and forth throughout. And so it's kind of hard to predict how much time it's going to take too far in advance. So the best thing you can do is look at our agenda and pray that, you know, we meet that agenda on it's posted, 7 days prior.
Right.
So, and then here is I think this was the original, but you can see.
Yep. Is this available on the website?
I think.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
All you have to do is click one of the orange button, anywhere in the orange, and it'll actually link you to that.
Okay, that's great.
Here's where we're at. Okay, we finished this the end of March.
Okay.
We started this actually a little bit early, but here's where we're at.
Okay.
And you see the time frame, and really, you know, this is stuff overlapping. Right in this five-month period.
That's helpful. So this is fourth workshop in the series, is it not?
I don't know if you can call it a series. We're here until we get done. We hope it's a shorter series. We hope it doesn't go the full seven games, but, you know.
So we took a look at the workshops, what elements were discussed, And then you're right, absolutely right, Marty, in terms of historic preservation, it was a part of two workshops. It's going to be discussed today. So we know that it kind of ebb and flows based on what you're able to get done. And the same for community design, you can see that there, utilities, land use, economic development. One of the frustrating things for the average person, and that would be me, and that is, we know this is a very comprehensive process. That's why they call it the comprehensive plan. But the average citizen would really like to understand, coming out of the 2008 plan, what's working. Right? Pure and simple, we're happy with the progress we've made with regards to what we plan for. There are certain things that we're not happy with, that aren't working. Just a simple statement, when we open up discussions on an element, is to review quickly with the public, coming out of the 2008 plan, these are the things that we think are working. These are the things that are not working. If you would review the 568 comments from the public might help a little bit in terms of what might not be working. Now again, not every public comment with regards to what's not working is accurate, because it's from their perspective.
Right.
But I think the public would like to understand that as it relates to any one of these elements, and maybe today's a great day to start. If you look at the elements that you're going to talk about today, although historic preservation is just an update, it's not an initial discussion. So if you take a look at, well, land use is not scheduled for today. Are there any new ones that are scheduled for today?
No. Today's as much was to catch up on a little bit. And let me backtrack, because when I answer that question for you as much as the public, because, I mean, the commission takes public input very seriously. Obviously, it's the public's plan, you know, for Sussex County. So just to take a step back, the first round of public meetings that we did, there was information gathered from the public, and I mean the public meetings out throughout the county. Mm-hmm. There was surveys that were conducted online and in person throughout the public, but also with the commission, with former commissioners, with members of council, and McCormick and Taylor took all that public information, and it was a lot of what was working, what wasn't working, what we'd like to see the county moving forward. And that made its way into the draft goals and objectives that McCormick and Taylor put together. So when we've gone through the historic preservation element, one of the things, to use that one as an example, we've seen on the screen all of the goals and objectives that were in the 2008 plan, as well as the ones that were compiled based on the public's input and everybody else. And then sort of the next layer is the commission then looked at those, both the 08 plan and the new ones, and said, well, what do we think in 08's working? What should we keep? You know, is there any that we should add? And of the public's, what should we keep or add or modify or whatever? So I realize that if I'm sitting out there in the audience and I see a list on here, I might not know the steps that took place to get it to the point where we're looking at what works and what doesn't work. But you know, I want you and also everybody that's here and watching out in the interweb to know that you know, that is all morphed into the process. So the next layer is going to be, we're going to have these five public meetings starting in early May, in which we're going to kind of roll out what we've done already, because one of the commission's desires was to be able to show work product. You know, we've been doing a lot of stuff. Here's some of the things we've been doing, knowing that the public will be able to comment on that. And also there's going to be an opportunity fairly wide open for people to ask questions or present information of things they want to see moving forward. So that's going to be another level of public input that the commission's going to take care of. And I also think, too, to your point, that, and I think the commission kind of recognizes this, I certainly do, is that of the information we've gotten from the public, there's been concerns about historic preservation and community design, but most of it comes into play, as we all know, with probably conservation, future land use,
yep,
mobility, the transportation one, and we're certainly going to, you know, hear a lot of public comment, take it all into account on that, and that's the ones where really you can look at what works and what doesn't
right.
work. And I mean, I don't think there's a person here or in staff right. or McCormick Taylor that's not going to, you know, do that. So, and I know you know that. It's kind
yeah.
of more of a broad statement
sure.
for everybody. So.
I think that at least from the perspective of the Sussex Alliance for Responsible Growth, Sarge, we don't have a doubt that you understand what worked and what did not work in the 2008 plan. We don't have a doubt, because you're all very talented people, and you're very, very close to it. But we can't expect the public to read through 10 pages of goals and objectives and sort of pick out, now, does that proposed goal or objective mean that it did not work or it did work
in
2008?
Yeah, I agree with your whole position. It would be nice to have at least a synopsis along the way as we read through it.
Right.
This could work better if we did. This could work better. This is why it could work better. Because it could be an opinion.
Right.
And then people can say, oh, okay, well, I don't hold that opinion, or I do hold that opinion. And then it could be further developed.
Yep.
Yeah, because it is hard to take just to read this and then look at these goals and objectives and try to, like, connect the dots.
Right.
And even for, you know, certainly I can't speak for the others, but for me being new, you know, it's I appreciate where you're coming from.
We used to use the phrase, I'm sure you've heard it before, and that's your elevator speech. We were always taught in business that if by chance you're caught in the elevator with the CEO that's going the same place you are, and he said, how's it going, you'd be able to say at least three things, right? And so all we're looking for is, as it relates to any of these elements, what are the two or three things that are working? What are the things that aren't? And then the people say, well, if these things aren't working, then we would pretty much be interested in understanding how this process is going to address those. What are the solutions? So again, our position is that it's not that we don't think you know what they are, but it would be helpful for the public to have a clear understanding. And I think you'd get most of the public, Mr. Wheatley.
The other thing I think we need to acknowledge is that opinions on what's working and what isn't vary widely.
Okay? Yep.
Widely.
And I think a lot of that is quite frankly, due to ignorance.
Okay? No, I disagree with that.
I disagree with that, too.
I don't think so at all.
Rich, let me
give you an example of something that's forthcoming that we haven't visited. And nothing was thrown off the table. I think the staff did a great job. McCormick Taylor did a great job in keeping everything on the table, even when there were conflicting opinions, mm-hmm. Okay? So something that's coming forward and it pertains to the future land use is densities. We have people that want really low density. We have people that want some high density. We have people that want something somewhere in between, okay? You can't get all three.
Yep.
And eventually, we're going to have to sort through that discussion, okay? And so those are the types of things that, you know, when you have conflicting opinions, it's not a matter of if it worked or didn't work. It's a matter of what you wanted to do going down the road. And I think, you know, most of the opinions are relatively informed, but they're maybe not, they're not in an objective sense of if we do this, what's the outcome? And hopefully today we'll get into that discussion a little bit.
Right. And again, let me backtrack. The use of the term ignorance, I was very ignorant in coming into this process.
Lack of knowledge.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, to your point, is that if they better understood the situation, they may feel differently about their complaint, because it could be much better balanced with the more information that that you learn. So.
Well, and in the information that you provided before, I think I agree with your position that, was it 70% of the complaints
68%
are mobility?
We're in transportation, conservation, and land use, 68% of the comments. So, and again, in finals, I know you guys got to get on with the topics of the day, but in the round two public meetings then that are going to be taking place, we have published this we're now up to over 3,000 people on our email list. We're getting the word out, and we're encouraging them to attend. What can we expect? What can we expect relative to the round two public meetings? Will they be similar to the ones in the fall? Because we want to make sure that we set expectations for the public.
We're going to discuss that today.
That's next.
Terrific. Okay.
Yeah. Discussion. Let's see. Yeah.
Next
public workshop
preparation. It's the next thing we're going to talk about.
Done. I probably took more time than I should have. I appreciate the opportunity every time to address the group. Janelle, I'm going to leave this with you.
Okay.
And again, thank you.
Let me
good segue.
Let
thank
me
you.
Tell you that we definitely appreciate your faithfulness.
I know what best design is: persistence or a pest.
It's good either way.
Well, no, you're here. You care enough to show up.
Yep.
So we're glad to hear from you. Anyone else like to speak? We're a little bit past our time. Okay. Come on up.
Hello. My name's Jamin Hudson. I live in Milton, Delaware. Just some comments. When I was reviewing the slides a few weeks ago on the comp plan, I noticed, I felt that it was a little light on the level one and two categories in the specifically the Broadkill 100 and the north section of the Lewis-Rehoboth 100. I have a slight bias to the area. Obviously, I live in southern Broadkill 100, and I'm a substantial landowner in the area, but, you know, I grew up in the area, and I'm a graduate of Cape and Lipman High School, and a graduate also of the University of Delaware. Just some observations I wanted to let the commissioners potentially look at is when I started analyzing the comp plan that was up on the slides a few weeks ago, I was also kind of taking into consideration the school districts. Cape and Lipman School District obviously also includes a substantial part of Milton, and it's one of the fastest growing school districts in the county, and so is Indian River. With that said, I think that those school districts, because they're growing, it's not just retired people moving here, it's also families with children. That should be an area potentially where growth occurs. I realize, you know, the Lewis-Rehoboth 100 is it's sort of maxed out. It's kind of penned in with, you know, the beach in the south and east and the Red Mill Pond to the north. And then the Broadkill 100 is penned in with Red Mill Pond to the south and the Broadkill River to extent to the north. And I think that's a logical area that our county wants to grow. I live there. I know in the summertime when traffic backs up, you know, it's hard to get to Rehoboth to get your groceries, to go to the bank, to go to the beach. And in the wintertime, actually, a lot of times I go to Milton to the grocery store. And I'm sure there's hundreds of people, if not thousands of people, like me. If you just look at all the houses around Red Mill Pond, there's, you know, a few thousand houses there. There's more houses along Cave Neck Road, new developments there. I know on the comp plan it has a lot of, you know, level one and two going down Cave Neck Road, but I also think the commissioners should seriously look at level, you know, increasing levels on Route 1 north of Red Mill Pond, potentially up to Route 16. And I noticed on the comp plan, I think a lot of the farmlands around there are still level four, which is the same as, you know, parts of Greenwood or somewhere else where there's not much growth. Over the last few weeks, I actually started researching some of the data offhand on building permits, county transfers, just to see, to try to also look at some of the data myself. And if you look at where, and I haven't finished looking at it at all, but on the building permits, but if you look at the real estate transfers, where are most of the transfers happening? They're happening first in Baltimore 100, second's Lewis and Rehoboth 100, and then I believe after that it goes to Cedar Creek or Broadkill 100 and Cedar Creek 100 and Indian River 100. Those are like the top five counties where real estate transfers are occurring. If you look at the building permits, I'm sure I haven't finished analyzing it. It's quite a bit of data, but if you look at that, it's probably a very similar story. And then you overlay that and kind of look at also where the school districts are and where the schools are being built. That's where the growth is. And I felt like the comp plan was a little light on that. And growing up in Southern Broadkill 100, you know, I've actually grown up in Lewis-Rehoboth 100 too, but I'm right on the line there. And I actually have a Milton address and a Lewis phone number, same in the same school district as CAPE, and that's, and I felt like that's where the growth is going. I felt like this plan was a little light on that. Another thing I wanted to mention to the commissioners is height restrictions. And I know there's a balance between, you know, the main things in this county for the economy are agriculture and tourism. So I know there's a balance there, and you want to preserve the environment. And I love farm fields too, you know, but I'm also pro-business. And I feel that the height restriction needs to be looked at. You know, sprawl, I'm not a big fan of sprawl. I think if we're also trying to conserve our, you know, beautiful resources of land here, I think the commissioners need to look at density. They need to look at our road systems. You know, our three best road systems, in my opinion, are Route 1, Route 113, and 13. And they seem to work pretty good. The east-west roads are questionable, Route 9, Route 24. I think Route 16 is a great road. I travel it once a week going to Greenwood. Let me see it. I think that's about it. Oh, and the other thing I wanted to mention, the Broadkill 100, obviously I'm biased of it because of my land holdings there and my family, but I think it also makes sense. Just, you know, as it gets crowded in the summer, traffic, there's multiple roads. So you can if you can't go up and down Route 1, you can take Cave Neck Route 88. If you're in, you know, South Broadkill, if you're in North Broadkill, you can shoot across 16, and there's multiple, or you can go down Eagle Crest Road or Hudson Road. There's multiple ways to kind of divert traffic, and so it's not all bottlenecked, which, you know, I feel is a problem in some parts of Lewis, Rehoboth 100, Dagsboro, and 100 and Indian River, and a lot of that's because of the geography of the Indian River Bay, the Rehoboth Bay, or the beach, or Red Mill Pond. Those are my observations. I appreciate your time.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Yep.
Would anyone else like to speak? If not, then we're going to close the public comment period. We thank you. There will be another one about 11:30. If you're sticking with us or want to come back, our next item on the